Welcome to Reading the Grid with Erin and Ina. Each week, we explore the stories behind books, movies, and shows that highlight the history of this dynamic sport. Buckle up for a fast-paced journey through Formula One. Now let's jump into it. Oscar Piastri claimed a commanding pole to flag victory at the 2025 Dutch Grand Prix, securing his first career Grand Slam by converting pole, leading every lap, and setting the fastest lap. The triumph widened his lead in the Drivers' Championship to 34 points over teammate Lando Norris. In what had been a fierce intra-team battle, Lando Norris suffered a cruel blow when an oil leak caused his engine to shut down and forced his retirements just 7 laps from the finish.
Ferrari had its worst points finish since China 2025, when both Charles Leclerc and Lewis Hamilton failed to finish, with Leclerc being taken out after contact with Mercedes' Kimi Antonelli, and Hamilton crashed out by going over a slippery painted line.
Max Verstappen delighted the home crowd with a hard-fought second place for Red Bull. Red Bull achieved its best result in the last 4 races by Yuki Tsunoda also scoring points in P9, while Isaac Hadjar delivered a breakout performance, securing his and Racing Bull's Formula One podium at P3. Speaking of Isaac Hadjar, Ina, he won my heart. Who won your heart in Zandvoort?
Well, this is more difficult than it seems because the usual suspect is Isaac Hadjar, who not only achieved his first podium, but he also won a very well-deserved Driver of the Day. Although he did a valiant job during the race, holding off Leclerc and Russell to stay in this position, the only reason he got on the podium was because of Lando's DNF. So if not Hadjar, who else could it be? We usually stray away from the winners, but this time I feel like Oscar Piastri's weekend had a great arc. He slowly but surely worked throughout practices where it seemed very clear that Lando Norris was ahead, and he managed to peak during qualifying and stayed focused during the race, not losing his cool after 2 safety car restarts. If we remember, he had a penalty from his shenanigans after a safety car at Silverstone, which cost him a win. My favorite moment from him was when Lando Norris overtook Max Verstappen, and the gap between Norris and Piastri started to reduce significantly until Piastri started matching Lando's pace, which showed that Oscar Piastri was just saving his tires until he deemed it prudent to reassert his dominance. So it was very calculated and very precise. There's, of course, was Ollie Bearman, who jumped the most, going from the pit lane to P6. But it's hard to say he won my heart because his qualifying was abysmal.
I thought Oscar Piastri was so composed during the entire race. He is fairly quiet. He gets on the track, he does his job, and he has been performing. I did not realize how rare it is for them to win a Grand Slam. I made that sound like we're playing tennis. We're not. He was racing in the
Yeah,
race,
there is a
but.
term for it. I think it's called, I heard it referred to as Grand Chelem. And there's also a word for something that is if you win all practices and, achieve everything that Oscar achieved, which I think Lando has achieved in the past in one of
Oh,
the
wow.
races.
Okay.
And that's why this is even more admirable because Lando was so on point during the
Well,
practices.
he
I did
won
not
all three
think.
practices, right? He was
And
P1 in the
very
three.
easily.
Yes, he was dialed in.
So I did not think Oscar, at least in qualifying, I didn't think Oscar could outperform him.
No, I was pleased to see that. And I was very happy when Bearman was in the points because that has been a while. And that was one of your midfield predictions. So,
It
and
was,
then.
but I also thought he would be in Q3, and if he was, he would have been even higher and
True.
maybe have taken the podium from Hadjar. We never know.
I was listening to F1 TV, and the commentators were going down the path of how they were talking about Hülkenberg getting on the podium, and they were saying how they didn't want to jinx Hadjar, and he ended up making it. I was happy for Hadjar that he made the podium. I thought the race itself was pretty exciting. I know it's hard to overtake, so I wasn't quite sure what we were going to get. We did have a little rain. Hurricane Erin didn't wreak as much havoc as she could have.
Oh,
And
she did her job.
she did, but I thought there was going to be way more rain than there was. So Hadjar won my heart. I know that's a pretty obvious one, but I was so happy for him. I kept thinking the entire time, him holding on to P4, it was his best start. He had such a difficult start in Australia when he went out so early. And I just kept thinking how it started, where we are now. I was just so proud of him.
Yeah, and I have to say, it was very nice to see the drivers congratulating him. So obviously, Oscar Piastri and Max Verstappen, but I thought his podium celebrations were appropriately happy. He was definitely part of the celebration, and then his team was elated. Lawson gave him the longest hug after the
Oh,
race.
I miss that. That's
Yeah,
nice.
also Pierre Gasly. I believe it was Bearman, but it was hard to say. It was a tall Haas driver with a helmet on.
That could have been either
Which
one of
one?
them.
But I mean, on the other hand, I was going to say Bearman, but on the other hand, Ocon in
Ocon's
his
pretty
interviews,
tall.
yes, they're the same height, by the way. He
Yeah.
and Bearman, I think there's only 1 centimeter difference. But also, Ocon, even in during his interviews, kept saying how he's proud that another Frenchman is on the podium. So it could have been Ocon.
Could have been.
Who else did I see? Like,
Hamilton, Hamilton.
I didn't see
Well,
it.
I don't know if he hugged him, but I know he did give him a shout out on his Instagram and
Oh,
congratulated him.
I'm just talking about the people
Yeah.
who got out of the car in the first. Oh,
Aw. Well,
Russell, the
Hamilton
first.
didn't get out of the car because he was already in the paddock.
Fair, but the people who like literally they still have their helmets on to be
Aw,
waited,
that's
and yet they
sweet.
made a
Yeah.
point to hug Hadjar, which I thought was very nice.
I would assume if Hamilton still had his helmet on, he would be right up there. So we can talk about who broke our hearts, leading right in with Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah, do you want to take that on? Because obviously,
Well,
I have to assume he is your number one.
he actually isn't my full number one because it's painfully obvious that Lewis Hamilton's race at the Dutch Grand Prix did break my heart. It was very encouraging to see him back in Q3 because the past couple of races, we had not even seen him make it into the final stages of qualifying. That was a positive. He had a positive outlook following the race, even sharing on Instagram that progress is being made. Sunday, he did crash out, which is very uncharacteristic of him at the tricky bank on turn three in damp conditions. His first retirement with Ferrari. It's just frustrating because it just looks like he still isn't fully comfortable with the car. And if that wasn't bad enough, the stewards added insult to injury by handing him a 5-place grid penalty for Monza and penalty points for a yellow flag infringement.
I may interject in terms of that. Think about the penalty. If he would have finished the race, it would have been just a deduction in terms of seconds. So the fact that he has a grid penalty for Monza is because he didn't finish the race. And the way the penalties are applied, if you don't finish, then
Yeah.
it becomes a grid penalty. But the yellow flag infringement was interesting because it happened on the reconnaissance lap. Now, this
I
is the
know.
second time this year something happens during a reconnaissance lap, and I didn't even realize it was a thing. So the first thing was also with Ferrari. It was during the Miami sprint when during the reconnaissance lap, Leclerc aquaplaned and crashed out, and that's why he couldn't take part in the sprint. So this is the second time that something happens in a reconnaissance lap that has consequences, unfortunately, for even the next race. But the what's interesting was that when I read the decision that FIA gave out, they claimed that it would have actually been a 10-place grid penalty if he didn't slow it down at all. The problem was he only slowed down, I guess, not significantly enough, and that's why they got that grid penalty to five places. So I have to say they have been consistent with these types of penalties, because if you remember, Ollie Bearman for overtaking during a red flag got twice the penalty of 10 place grid penalties. And one of them was in Monaco, where he actually qualified quite high.
Well, that is a red flag. And I get double yellow, you're supposed to slow down. But I was going to finish what I was saying by saying his crash stung. And it was difficult seeing him not finish the race. But the winners of Who Really Broke My Heart are the stewards. And I don't know if I'm going to say broke my heart, infuriated my heart, just drove me nuts this weekend. There were four drivers that were summoned to the stewards after the race: Hamilton, Leclerc, Russell, Bortoleto. We talked about Hamilton's five place drop for the Italian Grand Prix and not slowing down. We had Leclerc and Russell investigated, which I thought was fair that that was investigated. What I didn't understand was there's so many laps left in the race, why they couldn't make a decision based on video and rules. And
I think if they did, they would have given Leclerc a penalty. So I'm actually fine with them waiting until after the race.
Yes, because you're a fan of Leclerc.
Because
Ferrari,
I think they wanted to listen to both drivers, because it wasn't clear cut, I think, as some other. I mean, I don't think it was.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I'm just saying that one seemed. But the Kimi Antonelli getting 10 seconds, I completely agree with.
I don't think it was enough, but okay.
What would you do? It's the rule.
Russell got a Monaco penalty for cutting. He cut a corner. He didn't even overtake anyone. And he got a drive-through penalty, which is a lot more in seconds than a 10-second penalty.
Yes. The one that really got me the most, and he's usually not one I'm quick to defend, even though it's Peter's driver, is Carlos Sainz. I did not think he should have been given a 10-second penalty for the incident with Lawson. I don't understand what the stewards were thinking on that one.
That one I agree. So I think that one was the most egregious penalty. And actually that one probably should have waited until after the race, because it made no sense.
It made no sense. I thought that was completely unfair. And I know he was upset and said, what a joke. He was shocked. He's the one that got the penalty.
In my words of wisdom, we have a lot of science's thoughts on this penalty.
I mean, his radios were something special this weekend, but I hated it for him and his race. And then we had Max, Oscar, Yuki, and Gasly investigated for driving too slowly at various points, but the stewards accepted their explanations and issued no penalties. The stewards killed me this weekend. I found them to be even more frustrating than normal, and it would be wonderful if they could get some consistency.
I agree. There was a little bit inconsistent. So not every situation is the same. So I think the most egregious application of penalties was to Carlos Sainz, who definitely did not deserve a penalty. I think everything else was a little bit subjective and depended on the situation. And I can't really find that much fault with what they did. Obviously, I do think for Kimi Antonelli, it should have been more. But in terms of who broke my heart, so I also agree that I felt bad for Sainz. Not enough, because he didn't break my heart, because he doesn't have it. So I just felt really bad for him. I also felt really bad for Lando Norris, since the consequence of his mechanical failure were very significant for his championship chances. And I feel awful for the fact that both Hamilton and Leclerc DNF'd. The person who broke my heart is actually Kimi Antonelli. So his weekend was not terrible, since he made it to Q2, and he only missed Q3 by less than 0.2 seconds from Russell. So I think that is the closest he has been to Russell in a while. So I think that's an improvement. And he started the race well. And after Russell and Leclerc came together for that incident that was investigated, team orders prevailed, and Russell let him through. I mean, he didn't do it happily, but he did
That
it.
was a very sarcastic, great.
Oh, yes. No, we all felt it. Like, but again, he could have
He
said
did
no.
it.
Well,
He
he
knew he was slowing down from damage. I mean, you still
right.
want the team to do well.
Right. Kimi Antonelli had done all his goodwill by his aggression at turn three when he took out Leclerc. He definitely misjudged his speed. He drifted into Leclerc. It was pretty awful to watch. And obviously, I hated it that it had to happen to Leclerc. I do have to give him one glimmer of grace because I feel like if he did not take out Leclerc, Toto Wolff would not be as positive about the fact that he did not want Leclerc to get a penalty for the dust up with Russell because he didn't want Leclerc to get a grid penalty for Monza. And I feel if Antonelli did not ram into Leclerc, Leclerc would have finished ahead of Russell and then all bets would be off and he would be all about getting the penalty. However, it would have been applied to the race in Zandvoort, not Monza, which still would have been a better result. What I fault for this incident is Ferrari's strategy. It was horrific, this race, which has been the case for quite a few races.
Now that has been very consistent, how terrible their strategy has been.
Seriously.
Wrong type of consistency.
Very wrong type of consistency. So they only pitted Leclerc the first time before the incident. You know why? Because Hamilton kept saying, if we don't do an undercut,
we're
not
going to get around anybody.
Right. And the thing is, if they did the undercut with Hamilton, they would undercut Leclerc since he is the driver ahead. So they did it with Leclerc. Now, I'm not sure I will forgive Hamilton anytime soon because he had to have a freaking accident.
It's not like he did it on purpose or at that point in time.
But the only person who was negatively affected was Leclerc because
okay,
he literally
do you honestly think he would
lap down.
Intentionally hurt his teammate?
Yes. Yes.
I don't.
Because that's what the drivers do. Their teammate is the biggest.
Okay, do
no,
you
I don't
realize
think he
how
did it.
Insane what you're saying is?
No, I'm not saying he intentionally wanted to crash, but I'm saying he probably does not feel that badly that it affected Leclerc. Although, I have to say, Leclerc did come back. I'm sure you would because he's your favorite driver. Of course, you're going to take his side. But I'm just saying that was the worst timing possible. And then when Ferrari strategy decided to pit him at the same time or one lap after Antonelli pit, that was the most disastrous choice. First of all, I think Mercedes made a huge mistake by pitting Antonelli and giving up track position because he's now on soft tires behind Albon and again Russell. Granted, with Russell, they can always give him team orders again. But he still had to clear Albon, and Albon was no pushover. And if Hadjar in a racing bull would not let Russell pass when Russell and Leclerc still had the tires and the car, then I don't see how Albon would be that easy to pass. And soft tires degrade so much faster. So who knows where Antonelli would have ended up if Leclerc also did not pit. So the fact that Leclerc came in ahead of Antonelli, yes, that Ferrari would probably call that a win. But it wasn't, because even if they didn't have the dust up, now Leclerc is behind Albon and Russell. And there would not be team orders for Leclerc. So I just feel Ferrari's decision is horrible. And again, I don't know, I feel like I'm a broken record, but I keep telling them, why do a strategy where you sacrifice track position? Why are we so reactive? Why are we so willing to give up track position? The only thing that actually went right for Ferrari was that they had the quickest pit stop again, not the quickest overall, that still belongs to McLaren.
We should read the grid. We each had predictions based around Aston Martin and Haas. Let's kickstart with Aston Martin. They did show impressive pace at Zandvoort with Fernando Alonso and Lance Stroll running within half a second of McLaren in practice. The car's strength in slow speed corners combined with their recent upgrades really helped their performance. Everyone kept talking about the downforce and how the car would be really well suited for this track. We can talk about Lance Stroll's arc because that crash in FP2 was awful. They broke curfew, correct, to fix the car.
Yes.
And then he was out in Q1.
Oh, he didn't even make it to, like, he crashed right away, so he didn't put one time
No.
lap in.
I felt so bad for those mechanics.
Yes, he did thank them after the race, but I want to go back to FP2.
Yes.
So after FP1, where Stroll was running in P3,
I saw
Clarence,
that. Yes, he
which
was in.
Was,
that was shocking.
That was impressive. So
I say shocking, you say impressive.
Well, whatever. We didn't expect it, right? Well, it was
unexpected.
Because he was ahead of Alonso. So obviously the car was good because
And
Alonso
that
was
hasn't
P4.
happened. Alonso has been outperforming him
For years.
I was going to say, consistently.
Yes,
For
but it's
years.
practice. So it doesn't mean much. So in P2, when he crashes, the commentator make it very clear that this is the same type of crash that happened to poor Daniel Ricciardo that broke his wrist. Lance Stroll, who had his own issues with the wrists and recently had surgery to repair some of the damage, they kept showing him crashing and keeping his hands on the steering wheel, which meant his wrist would be affected. Now, do you know the one person who, right on the radio, specifically asked about him and his wrists?
I'm going to go with George, Russell, or Max.
Well, definitely not George, which I would have expected because he is the driver's representative, right?
Yeah.
It was Max. And he specifically said, how is his wrist? Because his wrists must be affected. And I'm like,
yeah.
Amazing. He's doing his practice runs and he hears about the crash and he immediately starts asking about the wrist. So I thought it was very, very considerate of Max. And
Very.
also, that was a big talking point because everyone was concerned about his wrists. The wrist seems to be fine. So he's back to FP3. I don't think he was that stellar. Then Q1 thing happens and we're all completely aghast and thinking there's no way he can get anywhere near the points. And he ends up in P7 in front of Alonso again. It was definitely good strategy. He obviously executed it perfectly.
What got me was when he crashed, when he had the issue in qualifying, he gets back to the garage and he immediately wants to get out of the car. He goes, well, that means we're out, right? And the mechanic said, no, we're trying to get you back out there. And then obviously they couldn't. Do you think he really wants to be racing?
I don't know, because in practice, when he was actually in it, he seemed like he was putting in the work, because otherwise the results would not be there. And I also actually think the mechanics were a little too optimistic, because when I saw that car after the crash, I knew he was never going to get out of it.
Yeah, I was a little surprised they actually thought that they'd get him back out there.
But actually, I applaud him for not wasting the weekend, because again, if he wasn't motivated, right, even with good strategy, he would have lost his concentration again. Because that's the thing. I think he loses his concentration, and I honestly don't know why. It could be motivation. It just could be maybe he's too stressed, and this,
Yeah.
which just boggles the mind. He's the most secure driver on the grid in terms of he will never lose his seat. So what are there to be stressed about? But that's, yeah, psychology is very subjective. So, Aaron, with his performance, is he wooing you?
We had a little bit of a roller coaster of emotion with him this weekend. I was very surprised. Shocked sounds a little harsh, which is my initial adjective, to see him P3 in practice. I threw out a pretty bold prediction that both Astons would place ahead of Max Verstappen, which obviously did not happen. But both Astons were in the points.
I mean, it wasn't that shocking for Alonso. It was more shocking about Lance, who got in front of him again. But Alonso, his weekend was like an arc in reverse. Where
Oh, I felt so bad for him.
So he was second in FP2, which set you up thinking, okay, well, now he's going to do something qualifying. He made it to Q3, barely, in P10. And then he went backwards in the race. He's raging as Mike Crack, who, by the way, has the best name, who's
Oh,
now used
he
to be team
does.
principal and now technical advisor for Aston Martin, put it. He was raging against everyone and everything. And he was. His radios were also quite interesting. But he kept blaming the team for giving him a horrible strategy. And they did. Seriously, every strategy call with him was just the worst.
Terrible.
It is kind of notable that every time they try something different, Stroll gets the better strategy, which
Now,
makes
does that
sense.
surprise you at all?
Well, I don't know.
Unless the
I don't think Aston Martin is, seriously, if they can give both of them good strategy, why don't they? So I think it could be part of it is luck. And I think part of it could be that they do prefer Stroll to like pit first or do what you would do for a leading driver. So that's possibility. I think in this race, it's just luck. Like, there's no way they would have thought that Stroll would end up in P7. Let me just tell you that, no matter what they tried. I think they just tried something completely different, and that made it a difference, especially with safety cars. And poor Alonso just kept pitting at the worst possible time, and then safety cars would come, and then he would stay out during the safety car and would like lose insane
Well, he
number
was
of
in
track
traffic
position.
the whole time.
He was.
He was in a lot of traffic.
He was a lot of traffic.
So on to Haas, they had a standout weekend. Oliver Bearman and Esteban Ocon climbed basically from the back of the grid to score points. Recovered from a pit lane start to finish sixth, while Ocon ended up in 10th. Both were helped by the safety car timing and a bold hard tire strategy. The double points nudged Haas closer to its midfield rivals in the Constructors' Championship, showcasing impressive strategy and resilience from the team.
I agree that Bearman did an amazing job starting from the pit lane and ending up in P6. However, without the three DNFs and Lawson and Sainz incident, he probably ends up in his least favorite position in P11. But you can only go with the opportunities that are presented to you, and he maximized those opportunities. My favorite part was when Bortoleto and Lance Stroll collided and or had a touch with Bortoleto's front wing dangling, and Bearman went on the radio to
Oh, I
complain
know.
about how it was too dangerous, it's very unsafe, basically narking him
He
to
took a
have
page
this.
out of George Russell's playbook on that one.
Listen, again, I think that's the opportunity. And he was, see, George has no excuse. With Bearman, he's in the back. How is he going to move forward? Is when guys in front of him get penalties and do crazy stuff, which is exactly what
It was
happened.
smart of him.
Very smart. And again, he would have won my heart if his qualifying was not so disappointing, but it was. And I think Ocon getting into the points was purely based on luck and everyone else going out to give him this placement. However, again, with him, my favorite part was they barely showed it, but he actually had to overtake Gasly. And I'm sure that was so satisfying. So Gasly, can we get into Alpine since it's like,
yes, please, because they had the most questionable strategies
oh my
of
God.
the
Well,
race. I mean,
for
I
sure.
honestly think they might take Ferrari out on this one.
No, I don't think their strategy for Colapinto was that bad. So they did split strategies, which is what I tell Ferrari to do. Now, granted, Colapinto only got up to P11, but seriously, a couple of more laps, he would have overtaken Ocon, whose tires were not looking great. With Gasly, they went for the worst strategy possible, and he was also in P10 at one point. Actually, he might have been even higher and then just kept
He was
sliding
higher
down.
than that and kept going down. And I was watching, as I said, on F1 TV, and the commentators even said, this is a bold move from Alpine. I want to say he was either fifth or sixth and then
No
just kept
way.
dropping. He was up there.
Well, that probably was during the pit stops because there's no way he should be that high. But my point is, I just noticed he was stuck at P10 for the longest time, and I thought that's where he would finish, probably higher, because I knew Antonella was going to get his penalty, so then he was going to move up. But when Ocon overtook Gasly, like they didn't show any radios, but I can just imagine the satisfying smirk on Ocon's face. So yeah, so I actually have to say, Colapinto, this was his best result in Alpine, and he finally, I think, beat Jack Doohan's best result. I mean, he is in the worst place possible, P11, so close to the points, and yet so far. And in this race, where so many drivers were taken out or had to
penalty
tumble down.
Served and all sorts of
yeah. So if he did not go out in Q1 again, he would have
he could
probably
have
been
been
high.
solidly in the points.
So the one other thing that I thought was interesting about Alpine is that in the beginning of the race, they actually told Colapinto to give up place to Gasly, which he did right away without any lip. So Russell, take notes. But at the very end of the race, when Gasly was just falling, they
they
told him to
reversed
switch.
it.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I thought that was very fair.
I did too. I was surprised, but I thought that was nice that they did that.
Yeah. No, I think it's only fair.
Speaking of nice, Liam Lawson was not nice to Carlos Sainz, but he was to his teammate.
He was, and I have to say, after the race, he did say that he didn't think Sainz deserved the penalties. He's not the one who's giving out the penalties, so I can't say he deserved it. But it was his car that plowed into Sainz, which is ridiculous. And yeah, so that was surprising to see Sainz get a penalty for that. I do think Sainz, and we'll again, words of wisdom will have a whole litany of Carlos Sainz's radios, which were gold, about how Sainz feels about Lawson. But I also thought it was interesting because Alain Permain, who is Racing Bull's team principal, said that the crash with Sainz caused Lawson to be in P5. And I thought that was insanely ambitious because yes, he would have stayed in the points and probably would have moved up from P8, which is where he qualified, which is also a decent result. But thinking he was going to be P5, because yeah, if you take that crash out, take Antonelli's crash out, and there you go. Things are completely different. There are more drivers ahead of Lawson. So yeah, I think P5 we're dreaming, but I cannot say I'm not surprised that he's that high up. I'm very happy though that it was Hajar who was ahead and got the podium.
Me too. If it had to be a Racing Bulls driver, I'm really glad it was Hajar. Williams, do we even ask the question? Can we have both Williams drivers have a good race? Please?
No.
Sometimes? Please?
No.
Anytime?
We cannot have one good one Williams is all that we are allowed to have. The funny thing is it was different Williams in qualifying in the race. And I think especially Carlos Sainz is livid because he was finally in P9 with the Williams, where Albon was P15. By the way, Albon was raging on the radio and during qualifying. So
oh, yes, he was. Some of
the raging
Albon's were
radios.
fascinating.
Exactly. But in the race, it was Albon who, again, climbed to P5. And Sainz finishing in 13. I have to say, I do appreciate how humble Albon is because that is not what we associated with our F1 drivers. So he said he definitely overtook five cars in the beginning to get to P10. I will never understand why they did not show that on
I
the
don't
broadcast
either.
they watch.
I mean,
That
I know there was a lot going on.
But this
In
is impressive. This is
it
very
was.
impressive.
Well, I mean, you had Max overtake Lando and then Lando get Max back. So, I mean, I get they focused on the front, but I wish they would have.
Well, so Verstappen only, Lando did not overtake him on the first lap. There was also Leclerc overtaking Russell, which personally I found
oh, that
very
was
satisfying.
Great. That was a good one.
But then the next one was this, five cars. That was impressive. But in any case, what Albon said was that after he became P10, all he had to do was just stay there and things were just happening. But again, it sounds very simple.
But
but
he
it could
stayed
be
in the
difficult.
race.
He stayed
He
in the
didn't get
race.
any penalties. He didn't crash out.
He got rewarded.
Let's get into your words of wisdom because there were some gems of radio messages.
Yeah, well, radio messages will be the main topic, but there were others. And of course, because of this whole section, it was inspired by Charles Leclerc and his reference towards the wisdom, I'm going to start with him. So we're going to start with a very lighthearted one. And that is the one that he mentioned during practices. He actually saw a fox crossing the racetrack, and he said, "There was a fox entry on turn 10. I think he's taking the exit road." So I thought that was very funny. And then when they showed the fox, I couldn't believe it. And it's funny because on the broadcast, they mentioned that, oh, maybe it'll bring him luck. Okay, now we know. If he sees the fox again, run away, run over the fox. I don't even care what he do with the fox. This is not working for his luck. The other message, again, that I thought was very positive was after the race via Instagram, he said, "Not the best start of the second half of the season, but the overtakes were fun. On to the most special week of the year, Monza." And I think that pretty much t says it all. I agree. This was a horrible start. I think we can only go up from there, but I'm almost afraid to say it because I feel like it's a challenge to Ferrari to do something horrible.
I would admit and say it's not just Charles. When I was watching practices and the highlights from practice, I kept thinking to myself, did everyone forget how to drive over the summer break? None of them seemed like they were coming back strong from break at all. Not how they wanted to start the second half of the season.
Oh, I completely agree. And but I do have to say that he's right, the overtakes were fun. His aggression was in the right place because I actually think he's one of the competitors that Max Verstappen actually respects and does not race the same way as he does others, where he tries to push them off the track. Although he was good this time, he did not try to push Lando off the track when he overtook him. But on his overtake of Russell, which I have to say, I think you agree, it's the best overtake of the year so far. It was absolutely amazing. But again, it was investigated. And so he mentioned about that overtake that it was on the limit, but I knew I wouldn't have many opportunities after that. He defended the inside. I went for the outside. I don't think he expected me to go for the outside. And then he did the corner just like I wasn't there. So then we touched, which I thought was a very appropriate distillation on what happens. And yeah, and I think they should let them kind of scrabble because otherwise, what is racing if you constantly penalize anyone who's trying to overtake? So that's my Charles Leclerc section. But the next one goes back to Christian Horner, and it's a text that he sent to Toto Wolff. The Toto Wolff revealed. So I thought that was interesting. And the text was, "What are you doing now? Because you love to hate me and I'm gone." Aaron, thoughts?
Well, I liked the competitive nature between the two of them, and they did have a love-hate relationship. I did see a quip from Toto that he said, "You have to have the good, the bad, and the ugly, and the good is still here, the bad is gone, and at least we still have Fred." And it took Fred a few minutes to realize what he was saying.
No, that's cute. But I think it's cute that no matter their love and hate relationship, they apparently still text.
Still think Christian will be back.
He might be, yes. And so finally, we came to the thing we teased about the whole time. It was Carlos Sainz raging on the radio. So this is what he said about Lawson. "He's just so stupid. Oh my God, this guy, it's always the same guy." Now, I don't remember him having that many crashes with Lawson. I know Lawson tangled with Alonso and Perez last year, and that produced a lot of frustration, some of which actually was shown on Drive to Survive, which I found interesting. But whatever you want to say about Lawson, he's not afraid to tangle. So I appreciate that.
I did a quick little search outside of the Dutch Grand Prix. In 2024, there was an incident late into the racing season where Carlos Sainz reportedly demanded a penalty for Lawson because Lawson ignored blue flags while being lapped. I think there has been tension between the two of them for a while.
Fair, but I don't think, again, I just don't remember it happening this season. So always the
No,
same
I think
guy.
that was late 24, so maybe they
Right.
just don't get along.
So yeah, so the next radio message is the one where he's told about the penalties. So he's race engineer. I think you could hear in his tone, like he knows what's coming from some signs. So he's trying to like, we got a penalty, 10 seconds that will serve at the pit stop. Who gets a penalty? Me? And the race engineer goes, you get a penalty. And Sainz goes, are you joking? I mean, it's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life. He's right. And then he adds, make sure we go to visit the stewards after the race. I want to have a talk with them. So just to fast forward, apparently the stewards did not want to talk to him. So I just thought, again, it's entertaining. I do feel for him because it is just so egregious and non-deserved. We don't have permanent stewards. So I hope for the next 9 races that we have, the stewards take this as a learning opportunity and either don't give a penalty in this situation or let's investigate after the race. Let's not rush to give a penalty because you never know what other information you can get.
Exactly. That would be nice. And speaking of the next race, it is really hard to believe that the Italian Grand Prix is next weekend. We head to Monza and you get to go first with pole prediction, Ina.
Oh, Monza, Monza, Monza. Okay, so there are going to be 3 races where I will have hopium that is not rational. And Monza is one of them. So even though he won the race last year, he wasn't on pole, I'm just going to throw caution to the wind. Leclerc, pole position. That's what I'm going with. Aaron?
I have had a lot of Ferrari hopium this year in my first season of cheering for the prancing horse. Has been dashed quite a bit. I'm not quite that ambitious for Ferrari pole. I am going Ferrari podium. I am going to say Lando pole because Lando is going to follow a revenge arc and get pole. However, I still think Oscar is going to be champion this year. I just feel like it's going to be Oscar. Lando has matured so much. It will be very curious to see if he can really dig deep, focus, and see what he does in the next 9 races to really prove champion.
Just so you know, in order for him to win without Oscar's DNF, he needs to win at least 5 races in 2 of the sprints. I don't see that happening.
I don't see it happening, but you never know.
You never know. But I think what that means is Oscar's getting the pole, right?
Yes.
Oh. You put
I'm putting Lando on pole.
So that
which means
Oscar.
Yes, Oscar will be on pole.
That's how it usually works.
That's how it works.
So for my P3, so initially, before even Zandvoort, I was going to do a double podium for Ferrari. Unfortunately, the grid penalty for Lewis Hamilton is just killing me because I don't see him qualifying that high, and then he loses 5 positions. So he's out of top 10 for sure to start. So unfortunately, my P3 is going to be Lando Norris.
Okay. All right.
Who's your P3?
Well, I know he has a 5 place grid penalty. I'm still going to put Lewis Hamilton at P3.
I love it. Go for it.
At some point.
He's going to get there. No,
he's going to have to get there. I realize this penalty is not going to do him any favors, but I will never mark him down and out. I mean, Hamilton might just be my permanent P3 the rest of the season because at some point in 9 races, the odds
you're going
to
get
happen.
It right.
I'm going to have to get it right at some point.
Yep.
I'm going to go with Hamilton P3.
P2?
I'm going to put Charles Leclerc.
You're not having him win. Okay.
I'm sorry. I said double podium.
Okay. No. Well, I'm going all in, right? So for P2, I put Oscar Piastri. I think for Oscar Piastri, this is a better track than for Lando Norris, even though Lando Norris has done really well on this track.
Yes,
So
he
I'm putting him
has.
P2. And then just an interesting fact, the last time when Ferraris DNF'd during a race and then Monza was the next race, they went 1-2. Granted, this was 1998, but
And I'm going to guess that one of the drivers did not have a 5-place grid penalty going into Monza.
I did not look at it into it, but my P1 is Charles Leclerc. I mean, I would be fine with P2, but I feel like I want him to win at least one this year just for his own personal sanity. And I think this
This
and
would be a good
Baku,
one.
so he's my P1. What about you?
Well, I realize most of my podium really doesn't have much logic to it, or it's all hopium, not reality, I guess. I don't know what you want to call it. I don't think Lando is going to not finish another race. I don't see how Oscar doesn't win, though. I'm just going to say Oscar. So I'm going to have Oscar, Charles, Hamilton. And you have Charles,
Oscar Lando.
Oscar, Lando. Got it. Okay.
Well, again, I wouldn't be opposed to yours, except if we can just switch one and two, that would be amazing.
Listen, it really would be a 1-2 finish. It would be awesome if it was Ferrari 1-2.
If there wasn't a grid penalty, I think it could have happened and I would have
The
been
grid
on that
penalty
train.
is killing me. Killing me.
So you told us what would happen to Ferrari for where I think Hamilton will land. I
You
think he's
think
gonna
he's going to get back to the points?
he's definitely gonna get in the points. I'm gonna put him P5 because I think he's
Okay.
gonna carve through the field and make it up. It's just not because I feel like he's gonna be I'm gonna put him around P12, P11. So I think making up 6 spots is still good, but that's where I see him. I mean, Ferrari is usually really good at Monza, and Monza is an engine track. I don't know what that means, to tell you the truth, except that another reason why I put Lando third and why I didn't put him on pole is because if he needs to take another unit, he'll be over his unit engine limit and he will have to take a penalty.
Oh, well.
So it might. The thing is, the issue was not really engine; it was
It
the
was
oil leak.
oil
The
leak, yeah.
correct, but he in there was a post-race interview where he bantered with Max and he said, "Oh, I'll get a new engine." So I don't know how that will work, but in any case, that's the only reason I put him in P3. So I just don't see Lewis coming from that far back. Like if he would have get pole and just be P5, it could happen. But I just don't see him being that high up.
Well, he did have sprint pole and converted sprint win.
Correct.
Long shot. He does get pole, starts P6, then podium. Lots
It's
of hopium.
doable.
It's
It's
doable.
very doable. Again, as long as they're both on it doesn't really matter. I'm
I'd be
okay with it.
ecstatic if that happened.
I'm just saying, like, a Ferrari has to win Monza because that whole atmosphere with the Italian anthem, like, I'm sorry, that anthem just rocks and they're all really, really get into it. And it's just no, like, that atmosphere is amazing.
Okay, so here's a super long shot. Silverstone last year had all British drivers. What if Monza has a Ferrari 1-2 and Kimi Antonelli at P3?
No, he doesn't deserve
He is your favorite rookie.
it. He is, but I'm just saying it's like Italy. It will take me a long time to just come to
I think
terms.
everyone would forgive him quickly if that happened.
Listen, if Leclerc is one, Kimi could be two. I'm okay with that, but that means he has to outperform George Russell. And again, I don't see that happening now. I hope it happens sometime, but not right now.
We have our podium predictions. We have what Ferrari is going to do. What is your best of the rest prediction for Monza?
I want to say Pierre Gasly does something amazing, but I doubt it because Alpine is just not in a good place.
You
And
mean
when he,
Flavio Briatore's not making great strategy calls?
Maybe he should. This would lighten things up. But the one prediction, I think Colapinto is going to be closer than he has been for a while. I'm not sure he's going to finish in the points, but I feel like he's going to be close to Gasly, no matter where Gasly ends up. I still think Bearman has it in him to finish in the points. And fine, you broke me down. Kimi Antonelli will finish ahead of George Russell.
Ooh, because at some point that has to happen too.
Exactly. I'm you with your Hamilton prediction and podium, and I'm with my Kimi ahead of George.
Fair. I am going to continue on with my love of Aston Martin, but I'm going to give it to Fernando Alonso this time. I think he will be P6 or higher.
Ooh,
Really
he would
just
love
throwing it out
that.
there, really throwing it out there for him. And I think Williams will have a double points finish.
Oh, that is okay. Who's ahead, though?
Well, typically Albon, but I'm going to give it to Sainz just because he had such a race this past weekend.
And I have to say, Sainz always did well at Monza, no matter what team he was in.
Right.
So, like,
So
I
I'm
think,
going to
seriously.
give him some redemption
Yeah, you know what?
possibility there.
I'm not gonna hate him for it because I do feel like the universe deserves something for his pen. By the way, he also got 2 penalty points for like
Oh, God.
absolutely
Yeah,
undeserved.
so he needs a little bounce back there.
And let's, no matter where Lawson qualified, let him be far away from Sainz for just this race, just to let them both breathe.
Well, I guess we will see what happens in just a few short days.
Yay.
Now that we've got our predictions locked in for Monza, let's do a quick spill the grid where we dish out some of the off-track drama and talk about some of the behind-the-scenes chaos. So, Cadillac did confirm our favorite drivers, Valtteri Bottas and Sergio Perez last week. However, we've got an interesting tidbit, Ina.
We do. So Colton Herta, who is an IndyCar driver who finished P2 in 2024 and is 26 years old, is leaving IndyCar to join Prema Racing next season, competing in Formula 2 in order to earn enough super license points to secure a Formula 1 seat in 2027. Now, in IndyCar, Herta is racing for Andretti. Obviously, Andretti Cadillac is now the Cadillac team, and Cadillac is backing him, which means that he's trying to get ready to have a Formula One seat in Cadillac in 2027. Aaron, what does that mean for Perez and Bottas?
That probably means my beloved Bottas is out of a seat, is my guess, because if you have an American driver in Perez, if he stays, you would have Mexico, so you would still have the Americas. I could see the Cadillac wanting that type of pairing, would be
But
my
if
guess.
Bottas beats Perez, wouldn't you
Then
think that they would keep
I'd say they keep
Bottas?
him. I mean, I
Okay.
obviously am hoping out of the number two drivers, Bottas is better. I just know one of the big perks of Perez is also all the sponsorship dollars that come with him. And Cadillac being an American team, I just think the reality of it is probably going to favor Perez.
I think you're right. It's just unfortunate, right? That
It is.
meritocracy sometimes
Oh, it is. I
does
mean,
not
that's
play part of
just.
it. But I think it actually Herta is interesting because he's 26 now, so he's going to be 27 next year and 28 by the time he finally gets to F1, if he gets to F1. But I think it's still commendable that at his age in Formula 2, when he's competing with, teenagers, he's willing to risk his reputation to do it.
Yeah.
And I mean, even though he didn't work out, De Vries was 28 when he was put into Racing Bulls
I
or
think it will
Toro
be
Rosso, whatever they were called
whatever
at
it was at the time, but that was
that
a
time.
very short stint for De Vries.
Well, it wasn't supposed to be. It just
Right.
ended up being that way.
Well, it was just such an unfortunate situation for him. I saw an interview where Max was asked about IndyCar, and he goes, it's really hard to make the assumption that if just because someone does well in IndyCar, they would do well in Formula One, and the reverse of that, to even assume a Formula One driver would do well in IndyCar. So I don't know if he was avoiding the question or
He was
trying to
avoiding the question.
dodge
There
it, because
are quite a few
there's been
very
quite a few
mediocre Formula One drivers who are
F1 who have
very
gone to
successful.
IndyCar. Yes. So
Let's just remember Marcus Ericsson, who I'm sure is Charles Leclerc's favorite teammate because he beat him so decisively, won Indy 500, I think, twice.
yes. Yeah. Well, Grosjean did pretty well for a stint.
Right.
A stint.
So,
So.
yeah. Yeah, so I think actually that's interesting because we don't really have that much of a trend the other way from IndyCar to Formula One. Although I do
Right.
have to say, Jacques Villeneuve, who was the commentator for Sky Sports this year, won the IndyCar championship and went into Formula One and in his second year won the world championship.
Oh, we'll see. So maybe
He was
Max should
also the
get better
son of a legend. Yeah, he was
stats.
also the son of a legendary F1 driver, so I think the genes were there for his Formula One success.
I would say so. But either way, that's also a couple years out, and a lot of things have to happen for all of those dominoes to fall in place. So we'll see what happens.
Well, the only other thing I want to mention is that he could have gotten the same super license point if they just gave him enough of P1 practices. So again, it just shows that he wants to try it in a different way, which I think is interesting.
All right.
So this race in Zandvoort on a narrow track with few possibilities for overtaking may not have produced the heights of 2023, but still allow us to witness a lot of drama, chaos, and unexpected surprises. The debate about the fairness of penalties and the need for permanent stewards will continue until the teams and the drivers band together and demand significant changes. We are looking forward to the next race in Monza, which promises to be colorful, exciting, and if Ferrari win, the most exhilarating experience.
Thanks so much for hanging out with us. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an update.
We'd also love to hear from you, whether it's your thoughts on today's episode, your suggestions for F1 books, shows, or movies to explore, or a shout out to your favorite radio rager. Connect with us on Instagram, YouTube, or X, or drop us an email at readingthegrid@gmail.com. We want your ideas to fuel this podcast, so don't be shy.
Thanks for joining us on Reading the Grid. Keep your engines running and your pages turning. Until next time.